Hey everyone, this is Isaac, and you are listening to the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture Podcast. For weeks, I've been talking about my Bitcoin research, and today's the day we're going to get into it. I'm going to talk about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. I'm going to give a brief, as basic as I can, understanding of these concepts. We're going to talk about the history of currencies and how Bitcoin obtains its value and cryptocurrencies in general. Briefly talk about how you can obtain some, the trust involved in this system, and then most importantly, we're going to go through some theories about Bitcoin and cryptos as it relates to the conspiracy community. The theories I have that I will elaborate on are theory number one, the NSA created it, which is very interesting when you consider this essay written in 1996 that I'll go through on the show. Also, we will talk about theory number two, artificial intelligence created it. That is a theory out there. Theory number three, the devil created it. Of course, the devil always makes an appearance in the world of conspiracy. Theory number four, Bitcoin is the savior and will destroy the banker system. And then in the end, I'll give my conclusion, my personal experience with obtaining and researching the Bitcoin. And some more of my personal stances on it and where you can go with it. So here you go. Enjoy. Today, we'll be taking a look at the most controversial topic in the conspiracy world right now. If one peered into any of the threads available on this topic in Reddit, Facebook, or elsewhere, it would quickly become apparent that there is a schism in this community. The reader already knows what the subject is. Let's talk Bitcoin. First, the author, myself, I am not a financial advisor or expert on cryptocurrencies. This is not financial advice you should take seriously without further research and confirmation. I'm not an expert on these subjects, nor do any of the things I'm about to tell you indicate that I'm legally or personally advising that the reader should take actions to buy or sell anything. This analysis is merely my understanding of cryptocurrencies and how it fits into larger conspiracy theories. If you're looking for financial advice, please take all of this with a grain of salt and conduct your own research. Just because I have personal beliefs in this topic, which I'll reveal by the conclusion, that doesn't necessarily make it so. Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are the hottest topic on the internet today. Conspiracy theorists have been talking about this for many years, with many believing that the solution exists here for dodging the oppressive banking systems that collude with the Federal Reserve to steer the mass consciousness in whatever desires they pursue. To condense this idea, it is basically an innovative payment scheme that provides user anonymity and untraceable payments. At least that's what the original vision was, and that is what is echoed by the conspiracy people that follow this sort of thing. It is an electronic cash scheme with cryptographic mechanisms in place to address the problem of multiple spending and token forgery. Now, as a caveat here, I'm going to be using a lot of big words and terms here and try not to get bogged down. I try not to go too techie with it because I want everyone to have sort of a basic understanding of what this is and some of the theories behind it. There's basically a database of spent coins that will be maintained, and each user has a set of private and public keys to protect their own coins. Oh, wait a minute. That's not actually an explanation of Bitcoin. That's the conclusion from an essay written in 1996. Now, who wrote this? The NSA. They wrote it about electronic cash back in the 90s. This was long before Bitcoin and Satoshi's white paper came out after the economic collapse in 2008-2009. Now, we'll revisit this in a bit, but first, let's clear up the concept of what Bitcoin is first. When we talk about cryptocurrencies, or the most familiar example of a cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, we're actually talking about a system of promising technologies. To Depending on who you ask, the considerations will vary. For example, when you talk to conspiracy theory-minded folks, they'll tell you that cryptos are all about decentralization from the banks and user anonymity. You'll also hear that it is about democratizing currency, which sounds great. But what does that mean? And if there is a true power structure, oftentimes referred to as the Illuminati, then why would they allow such a thing to occur? The traditional power structures consist of banks and governments working together to legitimize and assign value to currencies. Certain events have eroded the trust in both of those. Examples include the bailouts for banks that were too big to fail, or back in 2016 there was an Indian rupee prohibition which abruptly banned certain notes and resulted in chaos. Now, one way around this is to decentralize the currency so it's not tied to governments or banks. This is based on a proof system through computers instead of a traditional trust system with banks and governments. The computers provide a proof that the transactions are authentic and valid, as opposed to the traditional system where banks are requiring people to have trust in them. Because, like I've said before, in the conspiracy community, traditionally, there is a lot of skepticism and lack of trust in the banks and the Federal Reserve. So the Bitcoin and the cryptos takes all of that offline from that. Now, like all technologies, there is a period of innovation in which early adopters help invest in it and allow it to mature. This concept of digital cash seems unrealistic to many people, but they aren't looking at it through the right lens. This transition will be no different from when workers were required to use direct deposit to put their money from the employer directly into their bank account. I remember that transition myself and being resistant to change because it felt like the money earned wasn't real. I actually wanted to receive a paycheck and then stand in line at the bank on Friday so that they could hand me dollar bills. Now, this sounds absurd, but I assure you it was a mindset that eventually gave way to the electronic direct deposit system used today. There are a slew of examples just like this, including the first grocery carts that existed. Stores had to actually pay workers to push them around the store in order to show and demonstrate to the customers how they could be useful. Now, that being said, the slow adoption of Bitcoin is most likely due to the barrier of entry involved. As of this writing and podcast, it is a bit too vague or technical for the masses to quickly and easily obtain. But there are apps and systems in place to make it much easier, which I predict will help make cryptocurrencies a more common asset than we can even fathom. Now, before we learn about more about Bitcoin, we have to understand the history that led us to this new technology. We're going to talk about fiat currencies and the value of Bitcoin. Fiat currencies are those that have no intrinsic value, much like the US dollar currently. Their value comes from a government declaring it to be so. But it wasn't always like this, however. In 1944, many countries made an agreement on the Bretton Woods system, which meant various countries' currencies would be tied to gold, allowing one to exchange between the two. But in 1971, President Nixon abandoned Bretton Woods and the gold standard, which was the gold that backed up the value of the US dollar. He did this in response to various situations in order to stabilize the US dollar. Thus, the US dollar became a fiat currency, which means it has no inherent value. The problem with fiat currency is that the people in charge are able to print as much of it as they want. Note that when I say print, it can also mean digital transfers from the Department of Treasury into the bank's accounts. Now, all of this can lead to inflation or even hyperinflation. Most failures in fiat currencies include the central authorities diluting their value out. Denarius of Rome was a currency that went from a high percentage of precious metal to actually 0% precious metal over time, just like the US coins. So what is the attraction to cryptocurrencies? Well, cryptos are actually similar to fiat currencies in that they don't hold any intrinsic value. Their value comes from their limited number and supply, which is similar to gold. The attraction to gold-backed finances are that they are tied to a fixed amount of gold, which, you know, technically isn't even necessarily fixed like the number of bitcoins would be fixed, because one could theoretically find more gold somewhere, which would dilute the demand quite a bit. So the cryptos are also not backed by a government, and there is a fixed number of them that can never be increased, much like the gold standard. Bitcoin there's various cryptocurrencies. I'm going to talk primarily about Bitcoin because that was the first one. But Bitcoins are capped at 21 million, which will be achieved or mined by 2140. Like I mentioned before, even gold is not really fixed, since more gold could possibly be found at any time. Now, the value of a currency is related to money and time. Money in the past was related to material objects like gold, because it took time, energy, and cost to dig it up and put it into jewelry, which is where the value ends up. The emotional attachment to the end item is what determines the value and keeps the value held. Gold was just difficult to move because it was too heavy, so the Chinese made paper to represent the gold, and that was kept in a building somewhere so people could transport and transfer the represented gold, and this was the first fiat currency. Now, Bitcoin is no different than dollars. It is a social contract we all agree upon. There's not a dollar bill printed for every dollar represented online either. It's merely represented online digitally, just like Bitcoin. Even if there was a dollar paper for every dollar in existence, it doesn't really matter. It's still just a social agreement, since it is a fiat currency. In fact, only about 10% of the total money is actually in existence as paper or coins. So if you think that digital currency was some kind of illusion that will never work, you need to think again, because we're actually living in a sort of digital currency environment already. On a show called Crypto Conundrum with Cliff High, he asserts that a fiat generated by a central authority has never lasted as long as the US dollar. He asserts that 42 years is the average life expectancy of a fiat currency. Now, China got 60 years out of theirs, and all nations keep going back and forth between gold and a new paper fiat. Now, when the confidence in the US Federal Reserve note dies, we've got to either go to a bartering system with gold and silver, which is no fun and many will die, or there will be a new system implemented as the old one perishes, such as the French Empire fading as the English Empire rose up. Those that aren't wealthy enough to flee will suffer during the transition. Now, this topic of conversation by Cliff High led me to wonder if the increasing wealth disparity in America in the past 10 years isn't a sign that the top 1% are trying to amass wealth in order to eject before it all collapses. Could it be that Bitcoin is being used as a gradual replacement before the fall? Now, to talk specifically about Bitcoin, it is the most prominent type of cryptocurrency available at the moment. And to elaborate more on this idea, cryptocurrencies, like I said before, are trustless systems, in the sense that one doesn't have to trust the banks anymore. Conversely, the responsibility of protecting one's assets and passwords relies solely upon them. The proof of transactions on the blockchain ledger is visible for all to see. That way, there is no need for trust, there's only proof. The energy exchange in cryptocurrencies is put into the computer machines that build this blockchain ledger and maintain its integrity. This is what's called mining bitcoins. When they say mining, they're talking about verifying and building the blockchain, which is the ledger. In Paul Vigna and Michael Casey's The Age of Cryptocurrency, they explain the original vision laid out by the enigmatic Satoshi Nakamoto in his white paper. He's describing a system of online exchanges that uses encryption to allow two parties to exchange tokens of value without divulging vulnerable information about themselves or their financial accounts. It is intended to operate outside the traditional banking structure and allows people to send digital money directly to each other, peer-to-peer, as the concept of middleman-free commerce is known. No banks or credit card companies are needed. No payment processors or other trusted third parties are involved. In effect, it is a digital form of cash. The Bitcoin revolution has begun. Most of those first invited to join it don't realize it. So currently, we trust the banks to keep the financial system honest. And the new cryptocurrency system allows individually owned computers to store and maintain the integrity of the transparent financial network through the ledger called the blockchain. This blockchain is maintained by computer miners who receive bitcoins in exchange for their resources in the form of electricity or computing power. Once all the bitcoins are mined, there will be transaction fees that fund the operation of the blockchain. Recall that decentralization of this crypto system is the key to its success. The decentralized computer network that cryptocurrencies operate from use a consensus algorithm which syncs on a global universal time, meaning if one node is hacked, it won't matter. It will get removed from the network. The problem occurs when one entity owns more than 51% of the computers in the system and can overrule all the others, effectively writing its own blockchain ledger. Now, all of this is intended to get away from governmental fiat currencies that can hyperinflate, as well as banks not being honest or accurate with their private ledgers. It should also be noted that banks in America operate on a fractional reserve lending system, meaning they do not need to have enough money in their account needed to support all the transactions they're processing. Again, the nature of money is illusory and relies on trust. Bitcoin is one way to increase trust by making all transactions transparent and decentralizing power over it. The computers, or nodes as they are called in the white paper, are now racing to encrypt, decrypt, and validate the transfer of all the cryptocurrencies. The value is found because the ledger, or blockchain, validates all the Bitcoin transactions. If this process didn't exist, one could just get a Bitcoin and make copies of it. Now, on this next section, I want to talk about how to obtain Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, but note that things change on an almost daily basis in this world. So between the time it took to research and prepare for this, things have probably changed since then, and by the time you are listening to this, things have probably changed since the recording. But I'm gonna explain my idea of how to easily do this from my perspective at this time. It should be known that exchanges, cryptocurrency exchanges, can go under or be attacked at any time. So ideally, one should put their Bitcoin into their own wallet. It's called a wallet. We'll go into that in a second. But don't leave your cryptos in the exchanges. Put them into the wallet quickly so there's less of a chance of someone stealing it, because thieves want to hack the exchanges because there's a lot of Bitcoins there, much like the Mt. Gox Bitcoin exchange that got shut down from hacking. Now, another option for a wallet is a cold wallet, in which someone transfers the private key onto a flash drive and unplugs it from the internet so nobody can ever get access to it. Now, the danger here is that flash drives get damaged by static discharge or mechanical failure often. If one decided they'd like to mine their own bitcoins, they would need a what they call a rig in order to do so. These are specialized computers that have the capabilities of running these hashing algorithms at a much higher speed than your typical PC. As far as getting the bitcoins currently, one of the simplest routes is to open an account on Coinbase and link it to your bank account, which can be used to buy cryptos at market price. Coinbase also runs the GDAX exchange, which is where one could put market and limit orders, which could potentially reduce or eliminate the fees that the Coinbase charges. Now, as a quick side note, you'll notice that the idea that you sign up for an account through Coinbase and then link it to your personal banking account obviously removes the anonymity. So Coinbase is probably the number one method for buying cryptos, and it's already removing the anonymity. On top of that, you have to upload a picture of your driver's license if you want to link it. So it's fully not anonymous. And also, you pay fees for buying. So is it that much better than buying stocks or any other kind of financial instrument? You could go into Coinbase, load your funds, transfer it into GDAX for free, and then do limit orders where you sort of speculate the price, and then you can buy it for free. There's no fees there. But if you want to do it the simplest way, there are fees. And we'll revisit this Coinbase topic in a bit. But let's talk about the trust involved in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. If one thought that there was sufficient trust in today's money system, think again. There are countries like Venezuela that have fallen victim to hyperinflation, but we can look at our own everyday credit card transactions as a trustless system. When we use our credit cards, we are often asked for identification of some shape or form, and this is done to reduce the inevitable fraudulent charges that occur all over the world all the time. Your credit card number, in fact, is probably already in the hands of some sort of cyber thief online, and you don't know it yet. The cost for doing this business in this method is actually absorbed by the credit card companies, who take a small cut of every transaction. I believe it's, you know, roughly 3-4% of the transaction they keep. And part of that is to pay for the insurance to cover the fraudulent charges. Which means we all ultimately pay for this sort of system when the stores increase the cost of their products in order to compensate for doing business with these credit card companies. Now, cryptocurrencies also have the ability to be used internationally and can move currency very quickly. One final time, I'd like to reiterate the overall concept here, is that cryptos remove the trust required in the current system. This is because cryptos operate on a concept called proof of work. Satoshi's original white paper spelled this out, and it basically means that we'll have a visible ledger called the blockchain that everyone can read. Now that we have a vague understanding of cryptocurrencies, let's get into the conspiracy theories surrounding this controversial technology. Theory number one, the NSA created it. The official history of Bitcoin is that a mysterious unidentified man who called himself Satoshi Nakamoto released his white paper detailing the way to create cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. He supposedly did this because his life is of no consequence and the power system and bankers would most likely attack his personal being to bring it down. Now, many theories about Satoshi exist, but as of this writing, there is nothing to suggest his actual identity. The creator of Bitcoin and this entire cryptocurrency system is completely unknown. SHA-256 is what is known as the secure hash algorithm, and this was created by the National Security Agency, the NSA. And this is what the cryptocurrency blockchain is operated on. However, This doesn't unnecessarily mean that the NSA created blockchain, since there are many applications of SHA-256 used to encrypt data. But it is very curious because blockchain and the process used to encrypt and decrypt all the transactions happening globally does in fact use this SHA-256 created by the NSA. Now, a guy named Quinn Michaels published a video on his YouTube channel called Kings of Blockchain, which alleges that cryptos were created by bankers, MIT, Stanford, and others that are part of the supposed Illuminati control system. And he's not entirely wrong either. Looking at the list of investors into Coinbase on the website Crunchable.com, we find a list of names that one wouldn't typically expect for a disruptive sort of financial alternative. Names like the New York Stock Exchange, the Bank of Tokyo Mitsubishi, which is the largest banking system in Japan, the eighth largest in the entire world, Section 32, which is an investment firm started by Bill Morris. That's the guy who started Google. And you know how much Google loves privacy and getting into it. He started the Google X secret program as well. I wrote a whole book on Google and the transhuman hell apocalypse where I talk about Google X. Draper Fisher Jurvetson, who started the viral marketing concept in 1996, which suggests that he understands the massive cultural influence abilities. Also, Tusk Ventures, which was founded by a guy named Bradley Tusk. And this is a campaign managing company that has worked with Comcast, AT&T, Google, Walmart, Stanford, the Rockefeller Foundation, and Michael Bloomberg. Tusk also started the Kronos Archives company that creates and stores memories in digital form, which again is a very transhuman idea. Now, the firm Andreessen Horowitz consists of these venture capitalists named Ben Horowitz and Mark Andreessen. And Mark Andreessen is the guy who created the first internet browser ever. And they invested hundreds of millions of dollars into cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. They also helped start up the Coinbase platform, which includes the aforementioned GDAX, which is the Global Digital Asset Exchange. Now, this discussion is of interest because the Coinbase GDAX system is actually veering from the original vision of the anonymous aspects of cryptocurrencies. They ask for the banking account info, driver's license, full names, photos, etc. when you set up the account. Now, they are doing all of this in the hopes of becoming the first quote-unquote legitimate service for the masses. And surely it's because they see the writing on the wall that government wants to collect tax revenue from these crypto investments. Or maybe they want to get the decentralized currency back under their control. The Illuminati is known for wanting a cashless society that they can control, so this has the potential to be the way to do it. Now, it would take modifications to the crypto system that is currently in work, but it's not that far off. Another damning piece of evidence is if you look at the essay written in 1996 called How to Make a Mint, The Cryptography of Anonymous Electronic Cash, written by the NSA, we can see how the roots of crypto cash would have very easily been inspired or even created by the NSA. It details the concept of electronic cash and the ways to securely process payments with privacy through encryption, such as Bitcoin's NSA-created SHA-256. It also talks about user identification, message integrity, which is the checksum operations of validating cryptos, and non-repudiation, which is protection against false transactions, which is the Bitcoin or the blockchain. Now, if you read this essay written by the NSA, you can see the layout is almost the same. Take a look at the explanation of securing transactions from section 1B of this essay. It says, "These security features can be achieved in several ways. One technique that is gaining widespread use is the establishment of an authentication infrastructure. In such a setup, privacy is attained by encrypting each message using a private key known only to the sender and the recipient. Authenticity is attained via key management, that is, the system of generating, distributing, and storing the user's keys. Now, if this sounds familiar, it's because in Satoshi's white paper for Bitcoin in section 2, where it illustrates the transactions that utilize private keys and the hashing of public keys, it says this. We define an electronic coin as a chain of digital signatures. Each owner transfers the coin to the next by digitally signing a hash of the previous transaction and the public key of the next owner and adding these to the end of the coin. A payee can verify the signatures to verify the chain of ownership. Now, to play devil's advocate a bit, this essay addresses multiple spending of eCash by having the bank maintain a database of spent eCash. This is precisely what Satoshi eliminates with the white paper when he says we need to have a publicly visible ledger, aka the blockchain. Now, the essay also speaks about electronic wallets, which surprisingly sounds like smartphones or iPads. And this is back in 1996, mind you. And here's what it says. The outer module, such as a small handheld computer or the user's PC, is accessible to the user. The inner module, which cannot be read or modified, is called the observer. All information that enters or leaves the observer must pass through the outer module, allowing the user to monitor information that enters or leaves the card. The outer module, however, cannot complete a transaction without the cooperation of the observer. This gives the observer the power to prevent the user from making transactions that it does not approve of, such as spending the same coin more than once. Now, in relation to security and the theft of electronic cash, the 1996 essay says the following. Even if the cryptography and implementation are secure, the security could fail because of a physical compromise. If a computer hacker, a thief, a dishonest bank employee, or a rogue state were to gain access to the bank's secret key, it could create counterfeit money. If it gains access to a user's secret key, it could spend that user's money. If it modifies the user or bank software, they could destroy the security of the system. Now, this is also the same logic applied to cryptocurrencies. If a thief was to install a keystroke logger onto the target's device, then it would have access to the secret key and spend the target's currencies. And again, this is overall talking about taking the transfer of risk from the banks onto you. You are now responsible to secure your funds. And I'm not like a big fan of the banks or anything, but there's a little bit of, there's the FDIC regulations or whatever. There's all those protections and insurances that you will deposit your money and be able to get it out someday. This new cryptocurrency system takes all of the risk and ownership onto the user. You forget your password? Well, that's too bad for you. I guess you lose all your money. Someone hacks into your stuff? Too bad. You lose all your money. There's no one to talk to about it. There's no one to retrieve your funds. They're just gone. Now, finally, in that 1996 essay, they reveal the schemes listed as anonymous. In a prophetic analysis, they detail why this is a problem and how one could remedy it. It says, anonymity also makes it difficult to detect money laundering and tax evasion because there's no way to link the payer and payee. Finally, electronic cash paves the way for the new versions of old crimes, such as kidnapping and blackmail, where money drops now can be carried out safely from the criminal's home computer. One way to minimize these concerns is to require large transactions or large numbers of transactions in a given time period to be traceable. This would make it more difficult to commit crimes involving large sums of cash. Even a strict limit, such as a maximum of $100 a day on withdrawals and deposits, can add up quickly. However, especially if one can open several accounts, each with its own limit. Also, limiting the amount spent in a given time period would have to rely on a tamper-resistant device. Now, it goes on further to suggest that court-ordered traceability is also a fix for this problem. This essay only goes to show that those in power are always many steps ahead. They're playing chess while the masses play checkers. This leads to the theory that there is an impending crash on fiat currencies that will quote-unquote require a solution that isn't tied to one particular government, but rather a global government. The NSA essay actually talks about offline spending, which is curious because I've always wondered what the backup plan for Bitcoin is when the power goes out. Now, theory number two, artificial intelligence created this. YouTuber Face Like the Sun has a video where he takes clips from Jason Goodman's interview with Quinn Michaels, who's another crypto researcher. In it, they talked about decentralized autonomous organizations, DAOs, run by artificial intelligence. These are corporation entities with androids working like human beings, and they will be paid in Bitcoin. The significance of this is conveyed in the recent news that Saudi Arabia started this artificial intelligence slide with Sophia, who is the first android to become a taxed worker. So what is a DAO? It's basically a corporation run by AI with its records stored all over the world and run autonomously without any human interaction. Uber is toying with this idea as we speak. The blockchain system that Bitcoin operates on will be used by the AI-run DAOs, or DAOs, to commerce with one another. This is the neural network that it will use to become more intelligent. Without the network, it's isolated to its own system and cannot expand. Now, this idea is quite curious to me because Google purchased the DeepMind company in 2015 that is seeking a way to perfect neural networking and artificial intelligence. The issue here is that AI will be having its own encrypted private conversations, which allows it to plot and plan whatever it desires. Example could be the destruction of the human race or how to enslave us. The reason we can't read it will be because it's encrypted, like blockchain, which requires computers to decrypt. A recent video by SMQ, who was on the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast recently, discussed how in his computer programming experience, there were some times when code would be created that was invisible to the coders themselves in the form of foreign ASCII characters. So he was postulating that AI may be able to hide its own communications code inside of this blockchain. Now, this sounds like absurd science fiction, but Facebook already had problems with its AI crafting its own language, sort of. Independent published an article on the subject and said the following. But there appears to be some rules to the speech. The way the chatbots keep stressing their own name appears to be part of their negotiations, not simply a glitch in the way the messages are read out. Indeed, some of the negotiations that were carried out in this bizarre language even ended up successfully concluding their negotiations while conducting them entirely in the bizarre language. The company chose to shut down the chats because our interest was having bots who could talk to people, researcher Mike Lewis told FastCo. Researchers did not shut down the programs because they were afraid of the results or had panicked, as had been suggested elsewhere, but because they were looking for them to behave differently. Now, the theory about AI creating Bitcoin exists because nobody knows who truly built it, since Satoshi Nakamoto is anonymous. Proponents of this believe that AI solves the problems of banking fallouts, and its consciousness manifested this cryptocurrency solution. Cliff High refutes the AI theories because he states that software can only do what it's designed to do. It is not sentient with its own ideas. The decision process is not emotional. Software is not aware of itself and thus cannot change itself. He believes that AI is a fear built by the media that is simply not necessary. Theory number three, the devil created this. The infamous Bitcoin white paper that started all this was released October 31st, 2008. Some outlets claimed cryptos were started on the underground in order to buy and sell drugs based on its anonymity. Now, the counter argument to that is that the first Bitcoin transactions were not conducive for that sort of thing. For example, the first transaction ever was 10,000 Bitcoins for two pizzas. Thus, a small transaction of drugs would probably run in the 10 to 40,000 Bitcoin range. The Bible prophecies of a control system with allegiance to the Antichrist through the mark of the beast is in the book of Revelation, chapter 13, 16 through 18. And it says, "And the second beast required all the people, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead, so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, the name of the beast, or the number of its name. Here is a call for wisdom. Let the one who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and that number is 666. Now, staying on the Bible theme, Daniel 2:43 speaks of combining similar things. It talks about a disembodied spirit can be manifested through technology of DNA, quantum physics, and is allowing demonic spirits to manifest themselves in our world, possibly through Bitcoin. And like I said before, the white paper was released on October 31st, which, as most know, is Samhain, which is the great pagan holiday, the day where the veil between this world and the other is the thinnest. So, could it be a demonic spirit infiltrated and created Bitcoin? It's possible. Theory number four, Bitcoin destroys the banker control system. Now, this is the feel-good story that the conspiracy community wants to get behind. It's not just the conspiracy-minded folks either. Many others have been disgusted by the actions of Wall Street and the banks since the economic hits of 2008, which required all of the taxpayers to chip in a couple of trillion dollars to help them out. They're definitely fighting back against it. It appears that many are still demonizing it as some kind of fuel for the criminals, which isn't entirely wrong, just a misrepresentation. North Korea is being portrayed currently as enemy number one, and the mainstream media is discussing their interests in Bitcoin. On an article on CNN, it says, "It's not just Bitcoin's dizzying gains that make it appealing to North Korea. The digital currency was designed to operate outside of the control of governments or banks. That's likely to appeal to North Korea at a time when the U.S. is stepping up efforts to cut the country out of the international financial system over its nuclear weapons program. It has also proved popular in the past with criminals because of the amount of anonymity it allows. Bitcoin isn't tied to any central bank, and payments can be made anonymously without using banks as middlemen. That could help North Korea convert its stash into money it can more easily use." Now, also, the mainstream media is calling this whole Bitcoin thing mania. And on an article on CNBC, it says, "Bitcoin is in the mania phase, with some people even borrowing money to get in on the action," security regulator Joseph Borg told CNBC on Monday. "We've seen mortgages being taken out to buy Bitcoin. People do credit cards, equity lines," said Borg, president of the North American Security Administrators Association, a voluntary organization devoted to investor protection. Borg is also director of the Alabama Securities Commission. "This is not something a guy who's making $100,000 a year, who's got a mortgage and two kids in college, all to be invested in." So it's quite curious and obvious that the mainstream media was demonizing Bitcoin for a period of time and trying to sort of deter people from investing in it, which suggests that maybe that Bitcoin is the solution to overcoming the Illuminati or the Federal Reserve or the, you know, banker system that we currently live in. Now, in conclusion, I believe that the appearance of Bitcoin around the time of the economical downturn is a case of deus ex machina. It is simply too convenient. It's possible that the currency is some kind of setup from the NSA, Illuminati, or devil who aim to eventually take it over and rule us. Currently, we can still use cash, which is actually quite a bit more anonymous since its transactions can happen entirely off the grid. The cryptos get tracked at every single transaction and they never lose sight of it. So, is this really a plot from the Illuminati to weasel their way into controlling and monitoring all of our purchases? They could theoretically do it with credit cards, but physical cash remains untraceable, aside from serial number tracking, but you get the point. To me, it seems that technology initially becomes a liberator of mankind to provide freedoms, but eventually the powers that be find a way to take it over and use it against us. Email, cell phones, and even the internet are being used to track our every movement, action, and desire. The fact that there is a force pushing the FCC to consider repealing net neutrality rules just proves that there is a desire to consolidate power into the hands of corporations that seek to increase their wealth while limiting everyone's access to alternative schools of thought. Through the former Verizon lawyer and head of FCC that pushed for the net neutrality repeal. Now, the point here is that cryptos have the potential to disrupt the power structures like the banks and give more freedom to anyone who's able to access the internet. If we, as a population, can support the cryptos and systems that seek to truly decentralize the exchanges, then we have a potential win here. But it won't come easy. I assure you that there will be a force that seeks to shut this down or simply take it over. They started their battle against it when they portrayed it as a system of currency for terrorists and criminals, but that's simply not true. The 1996 NSA paper on the electronic cash, in it they address concerns that the anonymity of e-cash will have impacts on money laundering and tax evasion. The final words of that essay, in the conclusion, finish with this predictive statement. It says, "It may well be concluded that these problems are best avoided by using a secure electronic payment system that provides privacy but not anonymity." Judging from the investors in Coinbase and the steps required to set up a Coinbase account, uploading your driver's license, connecting it to your personal bank account, it seems that there is a push to provide privacy but not anonymity. Another idea to support the theory that cryptos are an Illuminati front, we need to look at the supposed article from The Economist in 1988 called "Get Ready for the Phoenix." In it, they predict the global currency will eventually take over for fiat currencies that will inevitably fail. It says, "Something will be almost certainly in the course of 1988, and not long after the next currency agreement is signed, it will go the same way as the last one. It will collapse. Governments are far more ready to subordinate their domestic objectives to the goal of international stability. Several more big exchange rate upsets, a few more stock market crashes, and probably a slump or two will be needed before politicians are willing to face squarely up to that choice. This points to a muddled sequence of emergency followed by patch-up followed by emergency stretching out far beyond 2018. Except for two things. As time passes, the damage caused by currency instability is gradually going to mount, and the very trends that will make it mount are making the utopia of monetary union feasible." Now, you'll note in there they did say 2018, and this article was written in 1988. Now, an article on the subject here, written by New Dawn Magazine, goes further into this 1988 issue, as well as some globalization concepts, and it says, the article advocated the formation of a global central bank, perhaps through the IMF, and this means a big loss of economic sovereignty, but the trends that make the Phoenix so appealing are taking that sovereignty away in any case. The article concludes in stating that the Phoenix would probably start as a cocktail of national currencies, just as the special drawing right is today. In time, though, its value against national currencies would cease to matter because people would choose it for its convenience and stability of its purchasing power. The last sentence says, pencil in the Phoenix for around 2018 and welcome it when it comes. Former U.S. Federal Reserve Governor Paul Volcker has said that if we are to have a truly global economy, a single world currency makes sense. A European Central Bank executive stated that we might one day have a single world currency in a step towards the ideal situation of a fully integrated world. Now, again, it's talking about that article, and they say the Phoenix, and that could be replaced by Bitcoin, but because the Phoenix is the hypothetical global digital currency they're talking about. And obviously the Phoenix ties into alchemy as the rising from the ashes, reborn into the new world, all those ideas. Now, that same article lists an exhaustive number of sources that all support the idea of a global currency. The most curious citing is a discussion on Russian and Chinese interest in a global currency that would replace the U.S. dollar. It says, in March 2009, Russia suggested that the G20 meeting in April should consider the possibility of creating a supranational reserve currency or a super reserve currency, and to consider the IMF's special drawing rights in this capacity. A week later, China's central bank governor proposed the creation of a global currency controlled by the IMF, replacing the US dollar as the world reserve currency, also using the IMF's SDRs as the reserve currency basket against which all other currencies would be fixed. Just days after this proposal, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, former president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank, told the Council on Foreign Relations that, in response to a question about the Chinese proposal, we're actually quite open to that suggestion, but you should think of it as a rather evolutionary building on the current architecture rather than moving us to global monetary union. Now take a step back and look at all this data. It gives us the perspective where it seems the idea of a global currency has been floated around the familiar Illuminati-esque groups like the Council on Foreign Relations and the Federal Reserve Bank for quite some time now. Furthermore, the NSA was instrumental in refining the concept of digital currency clear back in the 1990s, and they eventually provided the security hashing capabilities that would just so happen to be utilized by Bitcoin. So what are we left with here? I believe it to be an inevitable push down this path of global currency. Right or wrong, it will become the new norm. I believe that from an investment standpoint, it's not a bad idea because there are enough puppet masters involved with it to suggest they'll make this the new standard. Now, when I say that, let me clarify that. When I say an investment standpoint, I mean if there is a plan to make Bitcoin the global currency, you know, buying it now financially would make sense. Now, again, I'm not a financial guy, so do not listen to any of my advice without considering that. Worse yet, if the global bankster cabal decides to conduct a collapse of the U.S. dollar, then we'd be better suited to have our funds diversified. Will this new currency be the globalized control system that tracks and monitors every expenditure we commit? It seems likely, given the supposed protections we'll receive from, you know, money launderers, tax frauds, and thieves. They'll give us privacy, but no anonymity. as the NSA essay describes from 1996. So to me, it seems that cash is actually more anonymous than this digital trail that stays with the Bitcoins forever and ever. So if anonymity was your desire, then you've kind of already got that. Given the insane privacy invasions we've allowed in our country, it seems that this is the next logical step, allowing others to data mine our purchases. When considering the idea of Bitcoin as the currency of the Antichrist, sure, why not? Seriously, in the Bible's book of Revelation chapter 13, it says, Satan will have authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation, which some would interpret as the global one world government. The book of Revelation is veiled in such strange language that it seems to me very difficult to interpret specific meanings out of it. The Orthodox Study Bible says the passage is referring to people of the world seeking to deny God and would rather worship material things. Now, one could argue we've already crossed that bridge, so who knows? As far as the artificial intelligence theory goes, it doesn't hold a lot of weight for me because it's still just a form of machine learning where the computers are able to look into a database of processes that are pre-existing, and the computers can access this database without an engineer manually typing it in. The code for the blockchain is actually open source and understandable to computer programmers. It's not some form of esoteric code that nobody understands. However, Google's DeepMind and the Sophia Cyborg prove that artificial intelligence is definitely on the road to perfection, so who knows? I mean, there's also the theory that AI came back from the future to create it in order to fulfill its future plans. So that's my entire study of the cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. It was based on several reads and videos, Face Like the Sun's YouTube videos. David Seaman was on Higher Side Chats talking about it. Crypto Conundrum with Cliff High. Documentaries, Magic Money, Banking on Bitcoin, a book I read, Crypto Assets by Chris Bernisk and Jack Tatar. I've also spoke with many friends, acquaintances, and pretty much anybody that I meet that seems educated in economics, technology, or both. Those were all the sources I used to come up with this, and it took me a couple months to, you know, build this. And it was very curious because when I, you know, obviously as a conspiracy minded guy, I've heard of cryptos and bitcoins for years. But you know, I'm not the kind of guy that has like tons of money sitting around to invest in things. So I didn't really care to look into it. And when I really understood it this past fall of 2017, and I really started to understand how it worked, and it seemed very promising to me, and I wanted to buy some Bitcoin. But the process took so long. I want to say it took me about a month because of going through Coinbase, having to set up the driver's license and the bank account and all that crap. It was funny because I remember talking to a friend of mine on Thanksgiving about it, and the price was $7,500 of Bitcoin. And by the time I was able to get access to my account in towards the end of December, it was already up to like $16,000, $17,000. And as of this recording, it's back down to, excuse me. Let's see here. Let's see where it's at right meow. Keeps dropping because of recent things. Now it's down to 11,000 a coin. Will it come back up? I mean, I think so. I have a hard time denying the basic, you know, financial possibilities here. Because when you think about it, there's like 8 billion people in the world, and roughly, you know, half of them, 3 billion or so, don't have access to an actual banking system in their country. They do have access to the internet and a cell phone, so this would be their new currency. On top of that, there's so many third world countries that their governments are completely unstable, and their financial instruments they use fluctuate like crazy. They're very volatile, that Bitcoin is much less volatile than their own country's currency. So even if in America, Bitcoin and cryptos don't really take off, I don't think it's going to matter. I think worldwide, one form of cryptocurrency or another will stick and become the norm for trading. I believe in Japan, it's much more popular and used, because in America, it's not widely used, really, besides online, of course. So to me, from a financial perspective, I think it makes sense. I don't know which one is going to win the battle. There's like something like 800 some cryptocurrencies, and they're not saying like one's going to win and the others will fail. It's not like a Betamax versus VHS thing. You know, there could be just 1,000 of them out there, and you just trade based on the community you're involved with as to which one you want. Now, from the perspective of a more sort of spiritual standpoint, I do believe that these things lend itself to global governance and monitoring and this global currency of supposedly the Antichrist. They're all of great concern to me. I don't put tons and tons of stock into the Book of Revelation, like as far as, you know, I'm not going to be worried about some of these things and the coming of the Antichrist based on like some prophecies, because, you know, the Book of Revelation was written by a guy who was like, you know, I'm not going to say hallucinating, but like, you know, the Orthodox Church, we don't put a lot of stock into it. Like, it's not something we focus on. We focus more on, you know, the four main gospels. But yeah, I think with the transhuman movement and the idea of technology becoming integrated with our bodies and our whole personal lives, this is just one more step down that path. So that leaves, you know, me at a conundrum of, do I support this system or not? It's tough, you know. I if I want to be more materialistic and make some money off investments, sure. If I want to take a stand for what I, you know, I believe from the research that this is a coordinated effort, that this was created by, you know, maybe quote unquote the Illuminati, based on all of the similarities we see with the NSA's 1996 paper and all that. It puts me in quite the jam in between the two. So I know that's a bit neutral for the audience, but, you know, take from that what you will. And by all means, like I said, I am not a financial expert, nor do I claim to be an expert on cryptos or Bitcoin. But I wanted to share with you some of these ideas, and then you can do your own research and see what you think and invest how you want to invest. But to me, I feel like it's sort of an illusion to think that Bitcoin is some way of getting off of the, you know, the government or the federal banking system, because I think it actually, in the end, provides more privacy invasion and tracking and monitoring of our purchases. Anyways, I want to thank you for listening. Like always, please leave your reviews on iTunes or Stitcher for the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast. I read every one of them. I just read I had a few good ones on there. Then I had someone leave a 1-star and I read it, and it is what it is, and that's fine. It's not for everybody, but I do like to see what you think of it, see if you like it, see where, you know, your suggestions for where I can take this. But thanks again. Talk to you later. Best of luck with your crypto venture.